Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast about the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a senior lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. This is episode LXXVII. Such was the end of Commodus. Quote unquote, cheers for that one, Dio. One thing you can say about the reign of Commodus is that it must have been an interesting time to live in Rome. Between the spectacles in the Colosseum and the lowered life expectancy in the Senate, it was just a matter of time before someone took a knife to Commodus. Or as case may have it, poison followed by a wrestler. After almost a century in power, it's time to put the Antonine dynasty to an end. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
Commodus seems to do everything wrong towards the end of his reign. Our sources, of course, are very, very anti-Commodus. But he's going on a killing spree. He's killing off lots of senators for any kind of perceived wrong. He's also quite mercenary in that he's said, particularly by the Historia Augusta, to be making money out of positions that he gives. So he's selling posts. So the Historia Augusta, I quote, says, "In his reign, many persons obtained for cash both punishment for others and acquittal for themselves." So not only jobs, but also they're getting legal judgments.
What? So he's accepting payment for punishing other people?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you've got an enemy, you say to Commodus, "I want this person got rid of or fined or imprisoned. And here's a wad of cash."
Yeah.
And Commodus would do it for you, wow, according to the Historia Augusta.
Yes.
Which, yep, I always take with a little pinch of salt.
Okay.
Also, there's trouble in the empire. So this we've seen quite frequently, I think, that at the point where the emperor doesn't seem fully in control, and perhaps more so now because there have already been rumblings in the north, we get a lot more rejection of Roman rule. So in Britannia, in Germania, and in Dacia, there are all kinds of troubles going on, actually started by generals there. So there are armies there, and they're discontented with Commodus, and the provincials and their generals start causing trouble. And there's a kind of vague possibility that one of them will try and usurp his post. The Historia Augusta also talks about him being extremely cruel. So, for example, he had the practice ordering that everything that he did was base in pure, cruel, gladiatorial, or pimp-like. A great phrase, should be included in the records of the city. The records of the city are what are called the acta.
Yeah.
Sort of the closest equivalent they have to the news. It's the recording of what's going on, and it's an official record which might be read out or inscribed. And it's a completely inappropriate kind of behavior to want recorded for posterity. This,
yes,
is part of the Historia Augusta's line that Commodus overturns everything. He kind of once celebrated his awfulness, rather than trying to cover it up,
yeah,
which at least would be something if he tried to keep it under the covers.
So pimp-like I got from Burley's translation of the Historia Augusta. So can you, just out of curiosity, what is he saying there? What's the verb say?
The word for pimp-like is lenonie, which is an adverb made from leno, which means a pimp or a procurer.
Yeah, okay.
And indeed the verb does say anything that was typical of a procurer. So it does mean that. It is the word pimp in Latin too.
There you go.
So he's proud of that. He's proud of pimping out women, apparently. The Historia Augusta also talks about him acting out in public. Such was his lack of propriety that he often drank in public, sitting in the amphitheatre or theatre in women's clothing. So he's cross-dressing, drinking a lot, presumably,
yeah,
out in public. And it's the in-publicness of this that the Historia Augusta has a problem with.
See, if that was a normal Roman citizen, the guards would come along and say, "Look, sir, move along," or put it in some sort of Roman equivalent of the drunk tank, the drunk carcer. So the fact that it's an emperor, I can't get over that. That it's the emperor lowering himself to that much.
Well, it's kind of all in line with what the Historia Augusta says about Commodus in total. That his gladiatorial performances, I think, would be considered at least as, if not more, shameful than this kind of behaviour. So he hasn't really improved. If anything, he's got worse,
yeah,
according to this text.
So just when you thought the Commodus bar couldn't go any lower, he limbos under it.
Exactly. And people are getting very tired of it.
We're now up to the point where Commodus is going to die. So there are omens, as there is, because Rome, in retrospect, needs to justify this kind of action, I suppose. So what are the omens that we're given that things are going to go poorly for Commodus?
If you've got a weak stomach, don't listen to this. But
it's a bit late for that now when we're talking about Commodus, yeah, but continue.
The Historia Augusta has this lovely account of Commodus doing something nasty, which leads to an omen. And it is, after thrusting his hand into the wound of a gladiator who had been killed, he wiped it on his head and, contrary to custom, ordered the spectators to come to the show in cloaks, which is something used as funeral, instead of togas, while he presided in dark clothes. So this is actually an omen brought on by Commodus himself, kind of enacting a funeral. And it continues further. His helmet was twice carried out through the gates of Libitina, and Libitina is a goddess associated with death.
So that's where the dead bodies were generally carried out, through that gate.
Yeah.
So he's bringing this omen on himself.
Yeah, he's implying that this is some kind of reign of death, I suppose.
Or that he's not afraid of death.
Yeah, maybe so, and which would actually fit quite well with him being a gladiator, performing as a gladiator, because they have to not fear death.
Okay, all right, so that's one omen.
The other omens, the kind of things we find in Dio, who, very much in the tradition that we saw in Suetonius, likes to say that random things happened. They seemed to be random, but actually they showed us that the end of this emperor was coming along.
Sure.
Dio says in Book 73, Chapter 24, that there was a massive fire and that this itself was an omen. It was a fire that began at night and it destroyed the Temple of Peace, the Temple of Pax. It spread to storehouses of Egyptian and Arabian wares. And then it entered the palace. And of course, that's the real omen because it's the home of the emperor, and consumed very extensive portions of it so that nearly all the state records were destroyed.
Mm.
Those acta where Commodus has been writing down his bad behavior.
Yeah, sure.
In particular, this made it clear that the evil would not be confined to the city, says Dio, but would extend over the entire civilized world under its sway. I think that's a bit of a stretch, but it's what Dio believes, that if these records are destroyed, that means there are implications for the whole empire.
Mm. Fire through Rome, though, wasn't a strange occurrence, was it?
We've seen so many of them, haven't we?
Yeah.
We've seen really big ones in 64 and 80. And there hasn't been a let up in the 100 years between this one and the one that happened under Titus. But I guess when historians particularly point to them, they've been very extensive, as it seems this one was, because from the palace to the Temple of Peace, they're both in the center of Rome, but it's still a considerable distance from the Palatine down to the Imperial Fora.
I remember interviewing Kai Brodersen about the Temple of Peace for the When in Rome podcast, also available in iTunes. And he said that Galen lost all his works, or lost a great portion of his works, because they were in the library of the Temple of Peace. So he was moved to tears, and that was during this fire. So that had been around since the day of Vespasian, that temple.
Sometimes known as the Flavian Forum, basically. It's their equivalent of a forum. We should remember that temples aren't just ever just temples, and having a library associated with it, particularly the Temple of Peace has this, is not uncommon.
Yeah.
You know, some of them will keep the records of the treasury, it's in the Temple of Saturn, that kind of thing. So it's a bit more than, or maybe it's the equivalent of what churches have been in some periods, because they will have parish records. But these tend to be more state official records. It's hard for us to think ourselves into a time where there might be only one copy of books. So
yes.
Galen loses them because there haven't been copies made.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very sad. Apart from what Dio tells us about what's destroyed, Herodian says that the Temple of Vesta was destroyed in this fire, which is right in the middle of the Roman Forum and is where the sacred flame of Rome is kept alive. So this is really significant. It's quite surprising that we don't turn it up in other sources. Although, as we've frequently pointed out, Dio is being epitomized by this point, so maybe it was there originally. There is some evidence that this might be true, in that there's coinage showing that Septimius Severus's wife, Julia Domna, paid for the restoration of the Temple of Vesta. So maybe it was still in such a state after that fire that it needed this attention at that point. So this was a really extensive fire, and very destructive of some of the real standout monuments of Rome. which is the reason a lot of them get rebuilt in the 3rd century. And the form that we have them in, if we still have them, now probably reflects that rebuilding rather than the form we saw in the earlier empire.
All right, so with these omens safely in place and nobody really being happy with the conduct of Commodus as the emperor, well, spoiler, he is assassinated. What do we know about his assassination?
It happened on New Year's Eve, 192. He didn't make it into 193. It seems to have been something that is, you know, obviously there's a lot of building up to this. He's an unpopular emperor, but it's particularly brought on by the idea that he wants to kill both of the sitting consuls, Eurucius Clarus and Sosius Falco, and that this was going to happen on the first day of the new year so that he could be the new consul and come out of the school of the gladiators, the quarters of the gladiators, in that role, which killing both the consuls sounds like the bad thing there. But on top of that, coming out of the gladiatorial headquarters and announcing himself as consul is another one of those bringing together the two worlds that shouldn't coexist that Commodus has been doing all along. And that's really shameful.
So enough is enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He's lowered the standard of so much of being an emperor, of what it means to be an emperor.
Dio seems to talk about him as if he is Caligula and Nero and Domitian all joined together, with the assassinations, with the public performance, which we might associate especially with Nero, at least in a theatrical context, with the cruelty, which is something that's true of all of them, but maybe perhaps especially Caligula, Domitian too. Paranoia, that's very Domitianic. It's like he's taken all the worst parts of those bad emperors and stuck them all together with Commodus. He's kind of got the ideal bad emperor here, every single aspect that you can think of. But of course, the killing of senators, and in particular the consuls, and what that represents is what would really irritate somebody like Dio.
So there seems to be no actual motive for taking out these consuls.
It's not stated. No, Dio doesn't tell us that. He implies that Commodus wants to be consul.
Yeah.
So he has to get rid of the people who are there. It's quite hard to piece together the details from Dio and the Historia Augusta. They don't give us a lot of detail. The detail we have tends to come from Herodian. Personally, I don't regard Herodian as entirely reliable at this stage. So we have to think that maybe some of this is rather imaginative, but it's the best source we've got for any kind of detail on the death of Commodus.
Yeah. So if we were relying just on the Augustan histories, it'd tell us the players and it'd tell us that they kill Commodus. Essentially, that's
yes.
it.
The Augustan history only says this, very brief. Because of these things, i.e. everything that he'd done that was bad.
Yes.
But all too late. Quintus Aemilius Laetus, prefect of the guard, and Marcia, his concubine, were roused to action and entered into a conspiracy against his life, and that is Commodus's concubine, not Laetus's. First, they gave him poison, and when this proved ineffective, they had him strangled by the athlete with whom he was accustomed to exercise. Full stop, end of story.
Yeah.
It then goes on to, Commodus looked like this. So that's all the detail we get.
In true Suetonian fashion.
Yes.
I like that.
We get the description. But it's very brief, and it's in some ways it almost seems deliberate.
Yeah.
Like, we just need to get rid of this man.
Very anticlimactic.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And being strangled is, you know, the terrible thing you do to generals and kings after they've been marched in triumph and shamed the captured enemy. Then you take them somewhere and garrote them. This is a very ignoble death. If they wanted something noble, they could have stabbed him or cut off his head. Something with a sword rather than with a cord would have been more dignified. So Herodian says the revelation of who Commodus was going to put to death.
The hit list.
The hit list, exactly, was, to quote, revealed by a little boy who tossed out of his bedroom a tablet on which was written the names of those who were to be killed.
Right, so
that's great. That's just bad security there.
So he's come across the hit list. He's leaked it. So Commodus had to deal with fake news in his time.
One he didn't want sent out, certainly, with his private list on it, and that Marcia's name was at the top of the list. Marcia, or Marcia, had been the wife of Quadratus, whom Commodus had executed in 182, followed by Laetus, the praetorian prefect, and Eclectus, who is one of the inner circle freedmen within the imperial household, and a large number of important senators. So Marcia on finding out, said, "So Commodus, this is my reward for my love and devotion after I've put up with your arrogance and your madness for so many years. But you, you drunken sot, you shall not outwit a woman deadly sober."
Oh.
I like it, but it sounds so made up, I'm afraid.
Come on, drunken sot, keep going, keep going.
How would Herodian know? Then we actually get some information from Dio that Marcia was obviously being very close to Commodus, the one who tried to get the poison into his food and put it in some beef. But the reason it didn't work, Dio says, is because of his immoderate, of course it's immoderate according to Dio, use of wine and baths. So in other words, he was too drunk.
He threw it up.
And he went bathing. So he vomited up some of it and he didn't get all the poison. But this made him suspicious, so he started threatening people. So then they sent in the athlete whom Dio names as Narcissus.
This was his wrestling partner, wasn't it?
It's somebody that he trained with.
Yeah.
Presumably the training was meant particularly for his activities in the arena. And they strangled him while he was in the bath, because he was in the bath all the time, apparently. Herodian then says that they got rid of the body in a very undignified way. Not only was the method of death really something that you would expect some lowly character to get, but the body itself was bundled up in linen and smuggled out of the bath. They gave the bundle to two loyal slaves and sent it out of the palace as if it were no more than laundry. Somewhat bulkier than usual.
Yeah, definitely.
And in fact, there are suggestions that he should have an even more ignominious end and be thrown into the river Tiber. Dragged by a hook and thrown into the Tiber is the end that you give to traitors.
Mm.
This is something that Historia Augusta tells us that the Senate and people demanded. But by this point, the next emperor, Pertinax, has been named. Pertinax isn't happy with this. He actually shows a little bit of respect for Commodus's body and has it put in Hadrian's tomb.
Okay.
So he gets the proper end for an emperor, in fact.
That's a bit surprising because at this point, the Senate kind of goes, well, that was a bit of a bad experience, and we get the Damnatio Memoriae.
Yes, we do. The Damnatio Memoriae does happen. The Senate decrees it, and that means that Commodus' name gets wiped out in any public place. Supposedly his statue should be destroyed, although statues do remain, some of them defaced.
Mm.
So there seems to be a bit of a conflict between what the Senate wants and the next emperor, the incoming emperor. And this is actually not surprising psychologically to me. Each emperor will have their own particular code of practice, what they want to get done, their vision. But there's a bit of a tension between, is it good for me to damn my predecessor and therefore I look good by contrast, or do I want to make sure there's still respect for the position of emperor? So if we go too far down the road of writing off everything the previous emperor did, does that make it easy for it to happen to me next?
Yeah, it seems a bit late for that, really, considering what's happened to some of the previous emperors.
True.
But I guess it's quite easy to forget.
Yes. And I guess it's about trying to build up the reputation of the imperial office again, maybe.
I think it was more so out of Pertinax's respect for Marcus Aurelius, because he was one of Marcus Aurelius's old generals.
That actually works quite well, doesn't it?
And
that
he saw Commodus grow up. He saw him as a young man go through adulthood.
So some residual
affection.
Affection for Marcus Aurelius still lingers on there, that you, even though Commodus has come to this terrible end, he was Marcus Aurelius's son.
So that's the end of Commodus and the end of a dynasty. So let's take a bit of a moment to reflect on that. I can't help but notice that every time a dynasty ends, it doesn't end well.
Yeah, well, why would it? I mean, it would carry on if things were going well and everyone was happy.
True. So this
or there was control anyway.
But you have a complete blank slate at the end of a bad emperor. And Rome goes, right, how are we going to recover? And the next person with a massive army rocks in.
Yeah. Some people would say that it never does recover to quite the same degree. We don't really get a dynasty straight away. And then we get the Severans. But we are kind of leading into the 3rd century chaos. And people will look back on this period as being one of relative stability until Commodus messed it up.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why there's such affection for the five good emperors, because this was a time when, at least within Rome and within the stable parts of the Roman Empire, you could live a fairly tranquil life. There was that potential. And that's all going to disappear in the third century. So they're going to look back at this through rose-colored spectacles. And it's not surprising that Commodus gets the blame for it all falling apart.
Yeah, but rightly so, though. It seems that he debases the rank of emperor so much at this point that it doesn't recover. I mean, you've had bad emperors before, but now you've got an emperor pretending to be a gladiator and, you know, thinking that he's Hercules, although letting power go to your head isn't unusual for an emperor. It's happened before. But I think mainly the gladiator thing, it seems to be the biggest fall from grace.
It does. And I think that it's because nobody really comes along and rehabilitates the role quite as well as, say, the Flavians did after Nero. Mm. So we have civil war after Nero, and that was, you know, pretty disastrous and bloody. But Vespasian was a very safe pair of hands, and he managed to inaugurate an albeit fairly short-lived dynasty. But it looked like things were okay for a while. I'm not sure that happens to the same extent after Commodus. And he has, you know, he's been in power for 12 years, and through most of that, according to the sources we've got, he really has been bringing the dignity of the office down. He doesn't seem to have done much that helped to restore stability through the empire. And we've seen that's been in trouble, really, since the days of Marcus Aurelius. We've had, or even before Marcus Aurelius, sort of fermenting under Antoninus Pius, that we're starting to have discontent in the northern provinces and pressure coming down from there. And it's really increased under Commodus, but he's not interested in any solutions to that from the Roman point of view, sending in the military and trying to bring peace back.
Maybe another thing that he does as well is cause so much damage to the Senate by pulling their standing down, by killing quite a lot of them and replacing them with people of lesser standing or cronies, that the Senate doesn't recover. And later on, Septimius Severus will continue killing senators as it is convenient to him. So you've no longer got that tier of Roman society.
I think it's a really important point, especially in terms of what sources write about the emperor. So often these sources are writing under an emperor who has at least declared respect for the Senate. Somebody like Tacitus. There are all kinds of theories about how Tacitus might really have felt about Trajan, but he at least isn't going to take a sword through the Senate. So he can look back at people like Domitian and see, you know, the trauma that there was being in the Senate at that time, or back at Nero, where you had these purges. Dio doesn't have that luxury. He has a hope for it, and then it doesn't really span out for him, does it?
Mm.
He's not writing from a position of relative security,
yeah.
I suppose. And there must have been doubt for the senators, which, remember, this doesn't affect the vast majority of people at all. It's just where we get our sources from primarily. For the senators, it must have felt like maybe those days of security were never coming back.
Mm. So how does Dio's chapter on Commodus end?
Book 73, which, remember, is in Epitome, so it may not be exactly how it ended originally, ends, I think, in a bit of a sinister way. It ends with that fire, that devastating fire of 192. And Dio says, "For the conflagration could not be extinguished by human power, though vast numbers of both civilians and soldiers carried water, and Commodus himself came in from the suburb and encouraged them. Only when it had destroyed everything on which it laid hold did it spend its force and die out." I think potentially that's meant to give us a feeling of, oh, Commodus dying out is this kind of unstoppable force, even though he is there apparently trying to encourage those who put an end to it. Maybe we could get the feeling that Commodus himself wasn't in control at the end there. There was nothing that wouldn't destroy the Antonine dynasty at this point.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, Senior Lecturer in Ancient Mediterranean Studies at La Trobe University, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it in iTunes. Reviews are appreciated, we read them all. They help new people find the podcast, and they help us feel appreciated.
You can follow the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can tweet to both myself and Rhiannon. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I'm at Nightlight Guy. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, we find out just how far we can push the frontiers of the Roman Empire. But until then, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.